You are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM here in Montreal. And my name is Robin Fadden, and this is Free Radicals, Science, Culture, and Connection. And today is August 18th, 2008. It is 11:35 a.m., and it is beautiful outside. Summer has returned to us, and we are happy. Today in the studio, we are actually talking about winter. I don't know why I find that so funny, but it's funny. It's, you know, it's apt. I'm talking with Hannah Hogue, who is my co-host today on Free Radicals, and she, in the spring, decided, well, was given a trip to the Arctic. And she is a science journalist and now a science adventure journalist. Hi, Hannah.
Hi, Robin.
And so she's going to tell us a little bit about her 2 weeks that were spent in the Arctic upon a science research icebreaker vessel.
Yeah, I call this the Sounds of Science because it's a little taste of what it's like to be a researcher on board the Amundsen, which is the Canadian research icebreaker. So I'll give you a bit of an introduction and then we'll just move on straight to having the scientists have their say.
Okay.
So far this year, the amount of sea ice in the Arctic remains below average, but it has not yet caught up with last year's dramatic decline, which led to a record low by September. As of the beginning of August, ice covered 6.54 million square kilometers of the Arctic Ocean, but that's 1.5 million square kilometers below average. Some scientists have even speculated that the summer sea ice could be gone in the next 5 years. For the International Polar Year, Canada mounted a $40 million project to study climate change in the Canadian Arctic. The project, known as the Circumpolar Flaw Lead System Study, or CFL for short, brings more than 200 scientists from 15 countries to the Canadian Arctic. They do their work from a research icebreaker called the Amundsen. It's the first icebreaker ever to overwinter in a flaw lead, a gash of open water that is created when the moving ice cap pulls away from the land fast ice. In April, I had the great privilege to spend 2 weeks on board the Amundsen, alongside a host of scientists studying everything they could, from atmospheric gases to sea ice and marine life. They even studied the mud at the bottom of the ocean floor. These are their stories.
Okay, so we'll play this clip from the Arctic.
I came up here for my first time back in January, and I've never experienced anything quite like this. I've never stood on sea ice and not been able to see land and just been surrounded by ice. I've seen polar bears, I've seen seals come into our moon pool. It's just been amazing. It's a wonderful experience. Hi, I'm Lauren Canlish. I'm from University of Manitoba, where I'm a new graduate student. Our weather balloon will be collecting temperature, pressure, and relative humidity as it rises through the atmosphere, and it'll go to about 22 to 25 kilometers high. We will be using it to validate our profiler, which is a new instrument that we have on board that runs constantly all day, 24 hours a day. And we will also be using the data to track weather systems moving through the area. Well, we're looking at the atmospheric forcing of sea ice up here and to see like the motion it's caused by these big storms and weather systems that are coming through, as well as it's going to be core data used by anyone in the end of the project.
My name is John Icoza. I'm a researcher with the Center for Earth Observation Science at the University of Manitoba. Today what we're doing is we're taking the helicopter out, doing a survey north of the ship going towards Sachs Harbour, and we're going to be flying an EM induction system known as the IcePick. It sends out an electric electromagnetic field, which sends a signal back from the surface of the ice and another signal back from the water-ice interface. And we use that to look at ice thickness and surface roughness. And the importance of that is we're going to use that to look at how snow distribution and ice roughness will affect polar bear habitat and how the two are related.
Hi, my name is Michel Gosselin. I'm a chief scientist on board the Amundsen this year. I'm coming from the Institute of Marine Sciences at the University of Quebec at Rimouski. I'm here to study the biology of sea ice, so all the microorganisms will live at ice-water interface. That's the bacteria, algae, and small grazers, which is called meiofauna. Today I'm here as to make some core and using the jiffy drill and also they use me for my hands, for my la force only. The cores will be bring back to the ship. They will be melted. Some will be melted at the room temperature. The other one will be melted with filtered seawater, and with that we'll determine the amount of or the abundance of bacteria, algae, and meiofauna. We will also determine the activity, the photosynthetic activity of the algae, the grazing activity of the meiofauna on the detritus inside the ice, and also on the ice algae.
Okay, my name is Marc Ringuette, and I'm from Laval University, partly a research assistant and PhD student in Louis Fortier's lab. And today it's work in the moon pool, so inside the ship we're doing net tows. We have two instruments, the hydrobias, which is a multi-net hooked up to the surface with where we get the real-time temperature and salinity profile, and a smaller version, 1 meter square, regular zooplankton net where we collect samples for biomass and taxonomy, and another one just to get animals to play with. The biomass and taxonomy is one thing, but to play with is really to have measurements on processes like egg production rates, respirations, enzymes activity, to know where, if they are still in dormancy, hibernating in the winter, and also all sorts of stuff like that. In general, but particularly at this time of the year, I mean, we have virtually no knowledge of what's going on in the Arctic, in the water column during the winter time. So we're at springtime. So that's really an interesting time of the year to look at what's going on in terms of ecosystem, actually.
Thank you. Remember the weight of the world, it's a sound that we used to buy. On cassette and 45. And now this little girl, she says, will we make it at all? 800 miles is a drive.
And you are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM, and this is Free Radicals, Science, Culture, and Connection. And we were just listening to some clips that Hannah Hoag, science journalist, took while in the Arctic this spring in April. And that sounded pretty fascinating. Like, how was life living on board that research vessel for 2 weeks?
It's a pretty amazing place, and pretty foreign to a day-to-day life in Montreal. To begin with, you're sort of, there's 80 people, 40 scientists and 40 Coast Guard crew living on this ship. And when I got there, the ship had actually been backed into a very large ice floe and was somewhat stationary, although we were drifting with the sea currents and the wind. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like a parking lot, I guess, for ships. And every morning, after breakfast, all the scientists would put on all their parkas, load up all of their gear into coolers and knapsacks and boxes, and a crane would lower everything onto the ice. And then all these scientists would go scurrying down the gangway onto the ice, providing the weather was good and there were no polar bears. You had to get the okay from the captain before anyone was allowed on the ice.
Wow.
And the other thing about working in the Arctic and on the ice is that security is really a big issue, like I said, with the polar bears. And so you have to have someone with you whose sole job is to carry a gun and look for polar bears.
Wow.
Because they can creep up on you and hide behind these pressure ridges that can sometimes be meters high. And a pressure ridge is where you've got two ice floes that collide. And so you have this buildup of ice that towers. And they're fast.
They
so
are.
You need someone who's just looking for polar bears. They wow. aren't doing any of the science itself.
Like your wingman, your mm-hmm. Arctic.
Definitely.
Wingman, wow.
So it's pretty fascinating. And because we were there for 24 hours of daylight, or almost 24 hours, that's not a factor in determining when you do your science. It's not a 9-to-5 sort of laboratory. Mm-hmm. People, if the weather's good and they need a lot of ice samples, they will go out before breakfast, start collecting them, then come in for breakfast, then go back out, collect some more. I think one day, one team, they called it an ice coring party. They collected about 130 ice cores. And these wow. things are like these 4-foot long tubes of ice, and they get them by attaching it's a core. It kind of looks like a really elongated apple core, and they attach it to a drill and a generator, and they just go into the ice and suck out this core of ice. And they, all sorts of different teams use that, whether it's biology, chemistry, yeah. physics. They're all using the samples for different purposes.
What are they looking for in these samples?
It really depends. Like, that's the really neat thing about the Amundsen and the CFL project, is it's highly multidisciplinary. You've got physicists talking to biologists, talking to chemists. So with the ice core, you might be looking at a section of it under polarized light to see how the ice crystals grew.
Okay.
And that tells you a bit about its age and the conditions that it grew in. You might be a biologist looking at the very end of the ice core, so where it reaches the sea, where it reaches the ocean, and that's the ice core, the ice ocean interface. And when the sun comes out, you have all these little undersea algae, these phytoplankton, the plants of the sea that mm-hmm. start to photosynthesize and grow. And there's this sort of orangey brown mat at the bottom of the ice. And depending on the thickness of the ice and how much sun and everything, it can be really, really thick. So lots of these cells are very thin, and the biologists are studying that.
That's pretty fascinating, because sometimes when I think of ice, I think of just this white, blue substance that doesn't really have any life on it.
Mm.
But in fact, the Arctic, even in the ice floes, it's full of life.
It is.
Okay.
It is. It's astonishing. The first time I saw it, I was, it's fascinating. And every time one came out, I had to run over and look at it again, because I just had to keep seeing it over and over again.
Yeah. And, I mean, but the thing is, you know, again, like, it's like this, in our minds, it's this blue, white place that's inhospitable to human beings. And so from our point of view, why go there, really, if it's not meant for us to be there? Why, you know, how did it feel when you were there? Did you feel that you were an alien in this landscape, or
I felt pretty lucky. Mm-hmm. First and foremost, there was one point I went up in the helicopter with John Iacozza. You heard him in one
yes.
of the clips, and we landed on a smaller ice floe about I think we were 30 knots from the boat, and just to collect a snow sample for another researcher who was based at another university in the States. So he was doing a favor for him, basically. And you sort of start to think, you look around and there's nothing else there. There aren't even footprints from foxes or wolves or mm-hmm. birds. And you realize that in about a month, maybe 2 months, maybe a little bit more, that ice floe is not going to exist.
Okay.
It will have melted mm-hmm. because of the temperature will rise. And not only that, but no other human will ever step on that ice floe. It's a bit overwhelming in many ways. But I mean, at the same time, you know, yes, it's quite the privilege for me to be up there, but there are a lot of people who live up there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we weren't that far from Victoria, Victoria Island, I think it is. And I mean, there's decent sized community there. There's communities
right.
all over there.
Right.
And so a lot of the work that the scientists are doing are trying to understand, climate change and the effects that it is going to have on the Arctic ecosystem. And because there are Inuit communities that are highly dependent on the ecosystem and its mm-hmm. productivity and its safety, really, as a food source, or its safety as a, in a physical sense, the structure of the ice and its security,
yeah.
it is important to find out these bits of information. It's important for them.
Yeah, and I mean, it's probably important for the entire, I mean, the global
yes,
ecosystem as
yes,
well.
Yes.
So, I mean, there are many levels to what's going on
Definitely.
In the Arctic and how it affects everyone on Earth. So, and you happen to get to see it firsthand.
Yes, yeah, very lucky.
Can you tell me a little bit more about sort of that firsthand experience in terms of the scientific research that you saw that was going on? Like you mentioned moon pools, and they were mentioned in the clip that we just heard.
Yeah, the moon pool is basically, it's this truck-sized hole in the bottom of the boat. And what it is it basically allows researchers to drop equipment into the sea even when the ship is encased in ice. So when it, or even when it's too windy. So if you were to try and lower something over the side of the boat, too windy, it would blow around, possibly smash into the boat. Or if, I mean, you're surrounded by ice, you obviously can't access the ocean. So it's, that moon pool, when I was there, was operating pretty much 12 hours a day from, say, 6 or 7 in the morning to 6 or 7 at night. And every hour on certain days, they were lowering these devices that would measure the temperature, salinity, and the amount of, say, phytoplankton in the water. So the amount of productivity, how quickly was the ocean becoming alive now that the sun was up. And they would do those measurements every hour just to get an understanding of what sort of the baseline ocean looked like at that time. And then there were other scientists like Mark Renget, who you heard on the clip, who was fishing for zooplankton and cod larvae so that he could better understand that level of the water column and the ecosystem and how it contributes to the overall food chain.
Okay, so these moon pools allow constant access to the water underneath the ice.
Yeah, and this didn't happen while I was there, but it could be the other way around, too. One time a seal came in to the moon pool and hung out for a bit.
Into the boat, basically.
Basically, yeah, looking for warmth. And I think because the moon pool is so close to the bunk rooms, people heard the seal and
that's
everybody
awesome.
Ran in there in their pajamas looking for it or something.
Well, I mean, and that's an exciting event on a boat. I mean, how long do people usually stay up there? Are these research projects all done up there, or is research sent back to universities and labs?
Well, it's really interesting about the Amundsen. It's an old Coast Guard boat that was retrofitted to be a laboratory. So there's about a dozen or a dozen and a half laboratories on board, and it allows the researchers to do a lot of the firsthand work on board rather than ship these samples back home.
Oh, that's great.
There's one team in particular that study contaminants in the Arctic, and a lot of these things are at really tiny, really low levels, and there's a high risk of contamination of the sample that they're looking at for contaminants. And if they were to ship it back home, they'd get it home, look at it, realize it's contaminated. They're already home. They can't take it again. Whereas if they're on board and they're processing these samples more or less on a daily or weekly basis, they can say, whoops, we got to go back, take another sample. We had some problems with those ones. And so the Amundsen is fantastic in that respect for letting the researchers get their samples and process them and figure out what's going on without all of these common problems that do affect science.
Yeah. That's great. Wow. And I mean, I have 1,000 more questions, but I just looked at the time and it's 2 minutes to noon here on CKUT 90.3 FM. But we will have Hannah back, because 2 weeks may seem like a short time in sort of Montreal and the great scheme of things, but 2 weeks on an icebreaker, I imagine that every moment was pretty fascinating.
Yeah, pretty full of information, whether it was scientific or just sort of day-to-day life or... the Arctic in general.
Okay, and you did take a lot of audio.
Yes, so I'll be back.
Awesome, that's great. Okay, well, thank you to Hannah Hoag, who has shared some Arctic experiences with us here on Free Radicals on CKUT 90.3 FM. And if you'd like to email us about anything you've heard on the show, you can email freeradicals@ckut.ca. And we'll go out with a song and see you next week.
Just one more drink and then I should be on my way home. I'm not entirely sure what you're talking about. I've had a really nice time, but my dogs need to be fed. I must say that in the right light, you look like Shackleton. Breaking up on the bay, off the Lassiter coast, light failing over the pole as every longitude leads up to your frostbitten feet.
you're very sweet. Thank you for the flowers and the book, my Delta. But I must be getting back to dear Antarctica. Say, do you have a ship? And it does enable men. Then maybe you could lend me.